Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Welcome to the Idle Red Hands. I'm Jeremy, and today we're doing something a little bit different. I have with me Nick. Say hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Today we want to talk a little bit about a setting and a game world that we've been playing in recently, which is Malifaux. The company Weird has developed a miniature skirmish game, which is on its second edition. Let's talk a little bit about the setting of that world. It's maybe mistaken from the look of some of the miniatures as a steampunk world or something along those lines, but they've come up with a much better explanation and a much more magical setting.
My initial forays into it were definitely a steampunk world, is what I saw it as. But as I kind of got into it more, it definitely covers a lot of genres and really mixes and blends them, but quite seamlessly as well, which is definitely a great job that Weird have done. The actual setting itself is the turn of the 20th century. What has happened is a great portal has opened. Some magic users from long ago opened up a portal, and now many humans go over to this other world, basically mining for what's called a soul stone, which is basically a very precious artifact that allows them to use magic.
Right.
Things like that.
It's a great excuse to kind of stop the development of technology. So they'll never be thinking machines or computers because they have this magical element soul stone that they can power not only weapons, but machinery and automata. So and it's a great setting. It reminded me a little bit of the setting for Mutant Chronicles, what they did. They had to come up with an idea why they're not going to have computers, why they're going to take a step back and diesel engines are going to be the highest tech.
Yeah.
And so using this, the discovery of Soulstone. So you've got this portal. And so Malifaux is the city or the setting, the settlement, right, that happens on the other side of this portal.
That's right. Malifaux is the name of the city that's right next to the portal. It is a mirror of Earth. And there's lots of buildings that are scattered throughout the city that kind of represent a good representation of many, many cities, famous European cities from around Europe, around that time and period as well. But inside the city, everything's not quite as it seems. So the city itself is perhaps about 25% settled by people from Earth's side.
Right.
The whole city is controlled by a faction called the Guild. They're your basic, not just basic, but they are an authoritarian group who just hold territory with an iron fist.
Right.
But they only control about 25-30% of the city. The rest of the city is in complete ruin. There's lots of sewer underways that no one really knows the full layout of. And there are lots of people, actually residents there, who live in squalor. But what is more important is perhaps in those areas as well, you have the natives of Malifaux, the Neverborn. These are basically nightmare creatures. A lot of them reflect mythology and monsters from Earth culture.
That's a nice, interesting setting. So you have basically the empire, the people that want to colonize Malifaux and control the resources there. And so they're in conflict with the other faction. So the Guild is the main human faction. And then we have the Neverborn, the natives of Malifaux.
So yeah, there's seven factions in total. Of course, the Guild is the main faction for the authoritarian control of Malifaux. The Neverborn, as we said, were the nightmare creatures and other types of monsters that live in the night. We also have the Resurrectionists, who, if you like zombies, they're your go-to. They love just raising the dead and kicking ass with that. And if you hadn't guessed from that enthusiasm, my faction is Resurrectionists. There's also the Arcanists. They are the opposite to the Guild. They can be seen as the terrorists or the freedom fighters of Malifaux.
Right.
They basically oppose the Guild's control over Malifaux for the Soulstone trade. And they operate outside the city a lot more. So wherever there is actually Soulstone mining going on, they're in charge of the unions, the union workers and things like that. And they try to undermine the Guild quite a lot.
Right. Yeah. So the Guild faction is an anti-magic faction, basically. Yeah. They don't employ a lot of magic users, and they're mostly hard iron and guns and swords. Yeah.
Yes. Whereas the Arcanists actually employ probably the most magic in Malifaux. We also have the Outcasts, and this is kind of a faction of just misfits and different types of characters that don't quite fit into the other factions easily.
The rest kind of group.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of like mercenary captain groups. A lot do cover the mercenaries. There's the new bandits as well. But you also have things like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, and his name is Hamelin.
Right.
And he does all of those sorts of things. Plus also a guy who was basically a body hanging from a tree that somehow mysteriously came back alive and is now terrorizing everybody. And he somehow fits into the same crew as the hired guns and things. Then we get onto the Ten Thunders. They're an interesting faction because they actually are mingled with all of the other factions.
Hmm.
They're the ones that have Eastern cultures. I see Japan, China, and I think like Malaysia is kind of where their themes are. But they have like fingers in all the factions. Mm. So they have a lot of these dual faction masters. Mm. The whole idea of them is they're also trying to vie for control of Malifaux against the guild, but they're doing it in a much more kind of secret society type of way.
Mm.
Finally, there is also the Gremlin faction. Yes. This one is perhaps the weirdest, to make a bad pun.
They're also natives of Malifaux.
They're also natives of Malifaux, but whereas the Neverborn are these scary nightmare monsters, I think gremlins kind of represent the lighter side of Malifaux. Mm. They're hillbilly hicks that live in the swamps.
Right.
These little green guys that like to get drunk and just kill things as they come. Right. But yeah, they're fun too.
And they have like a Warhammer orc kind of aesthetic. Like, you know, the troops are very disposable, and hurting themselves is always a useful mechanic. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a lot of self-harm going on in the Gremlin faction. They're a lot of fun to play. A lot of people, I think, joke about they are the easy faction to use because there are a lot of glass hammers in there.
So let's talk a little bit about the mechanics of the game. I think that was the first thing that initially attracted me. I liked the setting, and I liked some of the kind of weird Wild West things I saw with the guild, but it was ultimately the mechanics of the game that made me want to play. As opposed to a lot of other skirmish games that are using dice, Malifaux uses a deck of cards that they call the Fate Deck. And so it kind of connects to the whole magic of the setting itself. So you're playing with basically a standard set of playing cards where the suits have been changed to fit the symbols and the iconography of Malifaux itself.
That's right, that's right. And initially, actually reading about it, it was a turnoff for me.
Oh, really?
The way I got into Malifaux was, I was a big Warhammer 40,000 player. Mm-hmm. I love playing 40K. Being in Japan, space is always an issue. Yes. And then as soon as you have family, that space becomes a bigger issue.
Right.
So I started researching into games that used... I really, really loved miniature games. So I started researching into games that I thought I might try out.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was Infinity, and the other one was Malifaux. Initially, looking at Malifaux, it uses the card-based system, a deck of cards. I initially thought, I'm going to miss my dice. I love that feeling, because I'm also an Imperial Guard player from 40K.
Oh,
and awesome. Getting that handful of 40 dice and then just dropping them on the table just feels so good.
So
I thought I'd miss that a lot. But once I got basically the starter set for Malifaux and actually tried out the mechanics, it was really exciting and got me really excited into the game. But yeah, it basically uses a deck of cards. And I would say that there's an element of poker involved. And just like with dice, you use the result of the number of the card rather than the number of the dice to work out successes and failures of certain abilities.
Mm-hmm.
But what's different from dice games is that you are able to change results that you play. And that's where the poker element comes in, because every turn you only have a limited number of these.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the turn is progressing, you start using these more often, you start dwindling your resources.
Yes.
Then the other player might be pulling out some crazy moves against you, and you have no defense against it because you've used up all your cards.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing when to hold back your cards and when to use them is a wonderful strategic feel to the game.
Yes. The biggest frustration of dice, and especially like a game like Blood Bowl or something, where the complete randomness can sabotage everything that you're doing, whereas with the hand of cards and the mechanic they call cheating fate, so that you're using a fate deck and you have a hand of six cards that you can play against whatever you flip from the top of your deck, and so you're able to mitigate the bad luck a little bit and get something done when you want it to be done, but ultimately then it's within the timing of the game and actually how successful it was that it makes it, you know, whether it's worthwhile or not, because now you're holding no cards until the next turn. And I guess we could talk a little bit about the structure of the game. Each match is five turns. To determine the size size of the gang you're playing, they use soul stones as a measurement. So each unit is worth a number of soul stones, and you can play a 30 or 35 or up to a 50 soul stone game. And that'll give you, depending on the faction you're playing, anywhere from 7 to 20 units. There's a lot of smaller units on the table all at one time. So yeah, it makes a nice variety of the game, but also you need to plan your strategy because the game has a pretty severe time limit.
I would also say, I think what really drew me towards this more than others is, again, from the 40k aspect, mm-hmm. I love list building. Once you found that good list, you would stick to that one list. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of tabletop miniature games, you'll have those times where it's all about killing and you've worked out your best list and you're not going to be changing much from that unless you're playing against a certain enemy perhaps or a certain opponent. Whereas in Mattifol, what I think is very, very important is right at the beginning of the game is mm-hmm. you declare your faction, mm-hmm. then you find out what your strategy and schemes are right. for the game. Mm-hmm. And basically your strategy is something that you're both playing towards, and schemes, you draw four random schemes. You are able to pick two of them and keep them secret from your opponent. Mm-hmm. And so you're playing towards those schemes in secret. And that's, again, where some of that poker element comes right. in, where you're trying to bluff things throughout the game. And certain models are going to be better at certain schemes than others. And so once you have those strategies and schemes, you then build your crew. You choose your master, and then you choose all of the models that are under that master. And so that means that any two games are never the same. Mm-hmm. And I very, very rarely run the exact same crew in a game that I play, because every time the strategies are going to change, and I'm going to want to change out the models with different things. Mm-hmm. And so it always keeps it fresh, and you always learn new synergies with the models as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that does make it dynamic, and models that you may not have used in a while, once a certain strategy is on the table, once a certain scheme is on the table, you want to play them. So this isn't a kill your opponent type of game. It's a skirmish game, but there are the strategy and schemes that are available each match, and those earn you victory points. So you're playing for victory points. Dying, completely losing all of your units in the game, you can still win the game itself, and killing your opponent may not earn you a victory.
It's actually really interesting when you have certain strategies come up and certain mm-hmm. schemes that come up where killing your enemy may actually burn you.
Oh,
there's a scheme called Frame for Murder where you choose one of your own models to be the sucker. And if the opponent kills that model, you get the victory points.
Right.
So again, when that scheme is in play, you're like, do I kill my opponent's models? Like, that's a really scary model. I want to get rid of it off the table, but do I dare get rid of it? Because I might be giving two or three victory points up for it
right.
if I kill it off early. So that's just one example. But there's lots of other examples where you actually want to go out and kill your own models so that you can win certain schemes.
Yes.
There's schemes where you need to have less models than the opponent to score your victory points. Mm-hmm. So when you notice that you've been killing too many of the opponent's models, you're like, oh no, I gotta kill my own models, so I'm back into a kind of a reduced crew size.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that both the strategy and schemes add to each game. And like you said, it creates a situation where you're never playing the same game twice and you're always looking at things differently and finding different combos or different synergies.
And there is also like the categories of type of models that you're using in the game. Usually when I'm going into a lot of war games, it's like, is this one a sniper or is this one going to be a close combat specialist? But they're always kind of focused on killing in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so unlike a lot of other war games where you'll have different categories of basically trying to kill the opponent,
mm-hmm.
Whether that's like sniping, blast damage, close combat, things like that. Mm-hmm. Malifaux is much more in that role-playing game territory where mm-hmm. you have lots of, or like massively multiplayer online role-playing game
right,
kind of
right.
styles, where every model is filling a very specific role to help the rest of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a tank to hold ground and take damage. You have a what we call a beat stick as mm-hmm. well to basically try and kill opponent models as quickly as possible.
Right.
You have buffers who will just be passing out loads of buffs to all of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
You have summoners who will be raising up more models in your crew so you can just keep on pushing on more activations in your side. You have what's called like a scheme runner,
mm-hmm.
which is basically there to run around the board and complete the strategies and schemes that you have or help you do those sorts of things.
Right. Yeah, so you could actually win a match of Malifaux with ever getting into combat, just avoiding your opponents.
It's hard to do, but it is possible. There are certain models that will just evade like crazy, and you just are the most frustrating thing to try and hunt down because that's what they're built for.
Right. That's
kind of leads into another thing about Malifaux is you generally don't lose because of bad luck in this game. Mm-hmm. You lose because of a lack of knowledge.
Mm, right.
Because what is also very interesting about this, unlike some other games where you have multiple units which have certain similar statistics, but maybe just a little bit stronger in ballistical skill or a little bit tougher or a little bit weaker or better armor.
Right.
Every model is really unique in this game because they all have lots and lots and lots of abilities that are very unique to the model. Yes. And so learning what your crew can do is really, really important. And it does take a long time to learn those synergies and learn how the game feels with your crew. Every master and every crew that you run is going to feel completely different. And you have to relearn so many things when you're using a new master.
Yeah, I think that was something I've kind of been dealing with. So originally I went for guild crews and I'm learning those. And it would be fun to have some variety, but I still don't know my beginning crews well enough yet to even imagine learning a new master and trying to figure out how a different mechanic would work. Part of the reason I went with guild is it's the very, you know, human fighter choice. It's pretty straightforward. And there weren't any complicated mechanics when I was looking at Neverborn or Gremlins or some of the factions. There's some very complicated things that you need to have happen in a certain order, certain combinations to be very effective. And I wasn't anywhere near getting my head around
that. There's certainly a lot of what you would call a starter master compared to the masters you don't want to be touching if you're a new player.
Right.
So guild is a very, very good starting base because you have some of the characters, the masters that you might choose is like Lady J, who's basically just this woman who runs up and punches you in the face.
Right.
Or just kills you with swords and is just crazy strong.
Yeah.
And I keep on getting smashed by her quite a lot. You also have Sonya Creed, which I think you run as
well, a bit,
who's just a straight-up damaging magic user.
Right.
Who's just basically a ranged damager. So fairly straightforward, but also has some really, really cool abilities in her powers as well. So it's an easy one to learn. Mm-hmm. But again, it's also still hard to master because there's so much that you can do with them. And then you get onto the stuff that's really, really complex. So I've got one of my gremlins is Zip, the Rocketeer.
Oh, yes.
In gremlin form, who basically flies around on the jetpack and is constantly yammering, causing the opponents to lose concentration on trying to score their strategies and things. And he's got all these crazy abilities that is just there to mess with the other crew and stop them from scoring victory points. He's got a lot more delicate finesse to work out how he plays. And so I've played him a couple of times, but I have absolutely no idea how to use him properly yet.
Mm-hmm. Of course, because it's a skirmish miniatures game, the models were something that brings a lot of people into the game. Malifaux is on the second edition now, and they've moved to all plastic models. And the first edition metal models were a big reason why I didn't jump in right away. And they've moved to kind of a computer design assisted, nice plastic model design. But as we've talked about on many occasions, they're a bit difficult to assemble at certain times.
They are really hard. Like they make you, I came from GW kind of background of buying all my models there. And it's like, clip with big clippers and I can get away with that and it all fits together rather nicely. Even the fiddly stuff like the Imperial Guard is still relatively easy to do when compared to Malifaux, where I get a gremlin which is the size of like a Gretchen in Warhammer 40k, but it comes in 8 parts.
Right.
And literally I think I've got a zombie chihuahua for my resurrectionists, and it literally is a chihuahua. It's the tiniest model I have in any war game. And that came in 4 parts. Its tail and its leg was separate. The leg is literally this tiny, tiny little thing that if you thought it was just like an extra bit of plastic that was just literally like flash on the end of the sprue. And you're like, no, that's his leg. And you're like, oh God. So it is a really, like, it's not for the faint-hearted when it comes to building the models.
Yes. Yeah, some of the sprues are very intimidating because you see certain things broken into so many tiny pieces. And I think that might be just part of the medium, the part of the, you know, they're designing it in the computer and they're trying to think the best way to use the plastic, the best way to actually be injecting these models, and so they're breaking things up. But when it comes to actually assembly, I think a company like Games Workshop has more experience about where you want to put seam lines and how you want to put things together, and you don't want to separate things into such tiny components.
Yeah, and also I think the difference there as well is the GW does the heroic scale,
yes,
where
right,
everything's
right.
kind of big, bulky man
yeah, that's true.
Style. So they're already quite bulky, and it's easier to fit those things, mm-hmm. whereas you do have a lot of the spindly style
right.
In Malifaux. The models themselves are absolutely gorgeous,
yes,
I think,
yes.
and an absolute joy to paint. Because mm-hmm. again, because you're only buying a crew and you only need, say, 8 models for a game, mm-hmm. you can take your time on each model individually. You no longer have to do that factory style,
yes.
10 models at a time, spend a week just to try and get that one squad of tactical marines out.
Right.
It is a case of, oh, this zombie, I'm going to sit there and take time on it, make it look beautiful. And the variety in the game as well gives you a good chance to really, really explore your painting skills, I found. Mm.
They did a wonderful job. The art and the design of the characters is captured very well in the miniatures. And sometimes that's not the case, especially when you're going from artwork to digital design. Mm. Sometimes it gets sterile and things get lost in the poses and the expressions. But they did a really great job with the minis.
Yeah, pretty much actually all of the art that you see in Malifaux mm-hmm. is directly represented into the model.
Yes, yes.
So whatever pose they're holding and whatever look they've got in the art, that's what the model looks like.
Right.
There is a couple of moments where it's gone a bit different, mm-hmm. but generally that is true for most of the models.
And that's nice when you have multiple poses of the same type of unit, because then the art representing them on the card matches their pose, so you don't have to write number one, number two, number three, you know, on the bases as you do with some games where you actually have identical poses, identical casts.
That's right.
So Weird has a new game that they've actually released as a Kickstarter. Interestingly enough, when we are talking about the difficulty of assembling the models, they seem to have wanted to solve that. So the models in their new game called The Other Side come pre-assembled all in one piece. This game is, of course, set in the universe of Malifaux on the Earth side of the Breach. So that opening that was the gateway to Malifaux. This is the setting of what happens in the world while everything is going on the other side. It's a tactical squad-based version of Malifaux. So you're not quite moving into that large 40K scale, but you're getting a more tactical, and the units are squads, and you can compose your squads in different ways. It's a large 6x4 table tactical miniatures game.
What's been interesting with the whole Malifaux universe mm-hmm. is that as new rule books come out and expansions come out, mm-hmm. they are constantly moving the story forward.
Oh, right, right.
So with The Other Side, what has happened is for the guild on Malifaux side, there is the top dog, the Governor General, mm-hmm. who's controlling the guild, basically trying to become a god, has died, mm-hmm. and he's become this burning effigy in the sky over Earthside. And what's happened is it's basically blown the portal back in on itself,
right.
and now all the weird monsters and creatures and gods and things are now blowing into the Earth side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is where the setting is now for the Other Side game, where you have whole nations now rising up to fight the menace and fight each other for power. And so initially it's basically the main breach has come up in London.
Yes.
And so they've got planned for releases 4 factions.
Yes, yeah. That
was, so the first faction, the main faction, I guess you would call her the most standard, bog standard kind
yes.
of faction, is the King's Empire, mm-hmm. who is basically the British forces that have gone, the guild ain't doing it for us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to take control of our country again. And so you basically have a shooting army based off of, is it an early 20th century British army? There's a kind of a mixture of ages in there, I think, mm-hmm. and, you know, some high-tech stuff and low-tech things as well. But they're generally just a big shooty army. Then you've also got the other human side is Abyssinia, and this is the one that really piqued my interest in terms of just image and style. And they're basically a Nigerian high-tech nation.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a bunch of Nigerian tribes that basically harness soul stones to really push technology as far forward as possible. And they just have these really interesting styles. And I personally have a very big interest in things like African music and some culture and things. So it's nice to finally see like a war game incorporating a bit more of kind of African nations that's not a historical game.
Yeah, that's great. That is a rare thing to see. And it's great to see them represented as one of the major factions. And the setting or their kind of inspiration reminded me of the Marvel setting of Wakanda, the Black Panthers, you know, kind of the high-tech African kingdom, just because of how they're combining the technology and the look is very high tech, but still has a lot of native inspiration.
Yes, that's right. There is a good mix because initially it kind of looks a bit like basically African power armor.
Yes.
For a lot of the models. But then there are some other models which are very, very low tech, which are literally guys dressed in just their usual kind of clothes, riding horseback with spears and stuff and like AK-47s and things.
Right.
And it's kind of like a nice clash of things where these are kind of like these little skirmishes that go out kind of like low tech and fast. Whereas the main armies and these massive, great big walking monstrosities laying down the hurt. For me, that's going to be interesting as a painting challenge as well, where I am not just doing the power armor stuff. I kind of do like power armor things and I like that sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
But I really, really wanted to get something that was very, very African as well. And just to, again, try and challenge myself in something with painting.
The other two factions,
I guess, one which is closest to the Neverborn from Malifaux in terms of its look and image is perhaps the Gibbering Hordes.
Yes.
Which some are believing this is the tyrant god Myrmidon, which has had mention in Malifaux, but hasn't really come up at all, because these are basically a bunch of sea monsters and sea creatures just pouring into London, in England mostly, and around the world. And they're led by creatures that are similar to mythic lore of things like Poseidon.
Right.
There's like a female Poseidon leader, and there's all these models. They even have like the street sharks. If anyone knows the old 90s cartoon series, they basically have the street sharks as one of the commanders for their side. And they're all about basically just swarms. As they come forward, they die and more come on.
Right.
So you get to just constantly put your models back on the table as they keep dying, kind of thing, to represent this kind of swarming effect.
Right. So, yeah, cheap regenerating units.
They seem fun in that sense of just... They do turn me on in that Imperial Guard sense of, like, just having lots of models on the table and just feeling good about it, kind of thing, and then just moving, pouring forward. And so you got nice big monsters in that. That's kind of cool.
Great.
Then I think perhaps the most striking... faction that they've got going is the Cult of the Burning Man.
Yes.
So after the burning effigy in the sky appeared over London, a lot of people went a bit crazy and mad and started mutating. And I think this is perhaps where you can draw some comparisons to Chaos in Warhammer and 40K, where they're all getting mutated and weird monstrosities are coming out. And they've got some amazing models for these ones. And it's amazing to imagine that these models are cast as a single piece and don't come multi-assembled.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, some of the kind of demonic portals and even the possessed humans have very intricate, kind of complicated designs. And so things being cast in one piece, we're not dealing with that flat pose, you know, one arm up, one arm down type of 90s miniature. These are very complicated poses, very dynamic, complicated poses, and they're going to need no assembly. And that was the other thing that came up with that is they're actually using a softer plastic. Okay. So that, so they're a little bit, there may be some new painting considerations, some priming considerations, some things you have to be careful of when we're doing painting, but this is like a whole next step for this company as far as the technology that they're using for their miniatures.
I think they've been experimenting with this type of, I think it's like PVC plastic using. They did it a little bit in Malifaux. So there's like some special edition models, like Ionis, the Master of Time and things. He's just a one-piece model made of this PVC. Mm-hmm. And they also brought out the Tortoise and the Hare, which come as these one-piece models.
Right.
So they've been obviously experimenting with them for Malifaux, and then perhaps this is them building towards the other side. I think that's kind of good when you've got this large army where there are a lot of miniatures compared to Malifaux, and you can just take it out of the box and play. Painting's going to take you some time, and there's going to be a bit of that factory feeling to the painting, but I think it allows a lot of people just to take it straight out of the box and play straight away, which also kind of links in with the gameplay elements from what I've read. We haven't been able to play, of course, but I've been reading a lot about how the game works, and it does seem to be a toned-down game of Malifaux.
Right.
But still keeping a lot of the strategic complexity. But again, keeping things very, very simple. So you just have a card representing your unit or your units on the table. There's lots of cards and it has all the information on there about them and the things that they can do. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is done with tokens. So in Malifaux, there's a kind of a lot of scribbling down on your cards to make sure you know all about the conditions and what all of these different things can do and remembering all the things that are happening. In this game, I think their main aim was to remove any kind of keeping track with writing. Instead of wounds, what you have is the number of models on the base. Mm-hmm. So generally in a fire team, mm-hmm. you have three models on the base, so it's going to have three wounds.
Right.
And they're plug bases. So as soon as that fire team starts taking damage, you just remove the model. So it's a very, very visually easy system for control, seeing where damage is, which makes it interesting for commanders, because if you have a one model commander, it only has one wound.
Yes.
As well. So I'm very, very interested to see how they balance all of those things out.
Yeah, I'm very curious too. And it does remind me that moving more towards using counters and tokens to represent things, it reminds me a little bit more of War Machine. You're seeing units on the table and they're surrounded by their activation tokens and the influence and things they've been given. I'm definitely looking forward to this system. And from what I've read as well, they do seem to be talking about making the entry into this game much easier by it not being as intimidating as Malifaux as far as the learning curve and what you need to understand about how to get your army to be very effective.
Yeah, and I think they've taken an interesting stance with things like morale. Because there's one thing when you're playing a war game and all your models just run off the board, it just feels bad.
Right.
So what they've actually done is they reversed that. Basically what happens is if you meet certain conditions, your unit becomes inspired. Mm-hmm. And then they can do all these extra new abilities. Basically, you turn the card over to be in the inspired state and they get more powerful.
Right.
And they can do all these new things. So you're aiming to get those conditions off so you can inspire all your troops. And so rather than feeling bad that all your troops are running away, you actually feel great about your troops getting more inspired and doing more things on the battlefield rather than less.
Yeah, I think that's a great approach. And I think they call it glory. I think that mechanic. Yeah. I think that's a great way to aim at a more positive response instead of kind of confronting the realities of war and realizing, most of your units are going to see the first death and run. run for their lives.
They do have tokens that basically debuff your troops in terms of morale.
Oh, right,
but it's just a debuff. There's nothing running off the board or anything that. So it is literally, I think, the shaken tokens you put down on the models. And I believe it, I'm not sure exactly how they work, but they might like reduce your acting values or things like that. Or you have to discard a card to remove the shaken condition.
Right.
So I should say as well, again, just like Malifaux, it's using a deck of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's using the same symbols from Malifaux because they're iconic to the world.
Right. I also read about a pin mechanic or a pinning mechanic. So you put pin counters on, so that limits their movement. So that adds a lot to the strategy of actually the movement on this larger 4x6 table is you're going to want to reduce certain units' movement so they're less effective and you can keep them out of range just by affecting their movement ability.
That's right. And they also have like reinforcement tokens as well, where as long as you can keep your fire team, once your fire team is gone, if you have reinforcement tokens, you can bring it back on the board again. So even if you have that model that you really, really like and it's gone, there is a chance of actually bringing it back in the game.
Because
often what happens is you buy that new model, it's the first thing to die on the table, and you're like, I didn't get to use it at all.
I know that so well. Yeah. Yes.
I did that to you in the last game we played, I believe. Yes.
Yes, yes.
Maybe I think they're aiming for December.
Oh, December.
I believe it was December 2017 is their target.
Great.
And from looking at all the posts that we're doing on the other side, where you would, I think you always expect it to be delayed.
Right.
Whatever expectations you expect to be delayed.
Yes.
But with Weird, they do have quite a bit of experience in the tabletop miniature market.
Yes.
And they'd already done quite a lot of work. I mean, all the models are rendered and they're building them. They just haven't finished all the production of all of those things. They're currently all the reports and their playtesting is the rules are 95-99% complete.
Yeah.
And all they're doing now is just adjusting certain statistics on the cards to make sure it's as balanced as they can get.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's anything like Malifaux, it's really how you use the models that determine how good they're going to be rather than being particularly OP.
Right.
So I'm hoping that they will still keep that balance of Malifaux, and that will definitely drive popularity with the game.
Yeah. Yeah, they've done a great job supporting Malifaux, the skirmish game, so there's always new storyline, new content, and new masters with new gangs coming out. So I hope they can do the same with another game, even though it's going to be a little bit larger scale, so there is going to be more involved in the production and maybe even the costs of having an other side army. But yeah, hopefully they'll be able to support and kind of enrich that storyline. And I think we're probably going to be getting more than the original four factions.
Yeah, they're already talking about having the Ten Thunders style faction, which is going to be an Asian influenced faction, because everyone's like pushing for that, and they want India. Like there's hints towards an Indian faction as well, or maybe that being linked in with the Asian faction and things like that, or even possibly in with the British King's Empire faction as well, as kind of colonial models and things. So there's a lot of room for expansion, and they've already got two other factions as well, which act as kind of mercenary factions for your armies. There's human side, and then there's kind of Malifaux side factions, which I believe are the Guild. Mm. At the moment, the Guild is actually renting out some of its warriors to Abyssinia and to the King's Empire.
Yes.
And then they have a weird name. It's like the Mask of Two or something like that.
Oh, right, right.
I can't remember the name exactly off the top of my head, but they are basically Malifaux side, and they hire out their creatures to both the Cult of the Burning Man and to the Gibbering Horde.
Nice, yeah. I'm really looking forward to getting that game going and seeing how Weird is going to support it, because, they do a good job with everything else.
So. And one advantage of this is terrain is, you don't need so much terrain for this one.
Yes.
Whereas Malifaux, a lot of terrain, you need that one.
Yeah, you need a busy board with a lot of line of sight blocking, otherwise you're going to get shot up pretty bad.
Yeah. It goes one-sided if it's not properly built.
Right. So to go along with the enjoyment of the kind of Malifaux lore and that setting in the world, Weird also has an RPG that is based in this world, and they call that Through the Breach.
That's right. So again, it's exactly the same setting as Malifaux, but rather than you playing a skirmish game, you actually, with a bunch of friends, are people who are called Fated, who have now traveled to Malifaux and are going on adventures in the setting of Malifaux. The good thing about Malifaux is it is such a rich setting with so many things combining into it. There's Wild West, there's lots of kind of espionage going on, and dealing with authority, dealing with outlaws, going off of crazy hillbilly adventures with gremlins, dealing with nightmare monsters from everywhere, dealing with zombie hordes. So there's lots of things there, and there's a lot of lore going on. So it makes for a great setting for a role-playing game, and it really is only held back by your own imagination, or the Fate Masters, who is the DM of the game's imagination. But it is also rather than a constantly ongoing RPG, it's contained to a certain time limit where you're fated when you're what I really enjoyed about the character creation process of the Fated is it's very, very involved. Whereas you're normally just like, I want to have these stats and I want to have these stats, and you kind of, that's very, very good that you're building towards something that you want to play. There is a certain element of I want to say randomness in building your Fated, where it's, you're actually doing a tarot reading.
Oh, nice.
With the cards.
Yeah, that's great.
And it really, really embodies the whole idea of Malifaux, where everything is connected with fate. And so you're doing a tarot reading that describes your character from birth to now. And you obviously have some choices in where things go, but it helps you really build the backstory of your character. Because just like in real life, you don't choose where you're born.
Right.
And things are all the opportunities that always come up for you. But as you get older, you start to choose those things a little bit more. So it allows you to build that very three-dimensional character right from the beginning. Rather than going, I just want to be an archer who's great with a longbow.
Right.
It's like, oh, I was born this, as this type of person. When I was a teenager, I started to rebel in this fashion, or I started to follow up in this fashion, or do these types of things. And you build all your stats and abilities as a progression of your years up to the point that you're going to Malifaux.
Nice.
And that kind of helps you decide your character and the history of your character. And straight away, right from the beginning, you've got depth there with the characters.
Wow, and that's got to give you a lot of great hooks for role-playing your character. You know, you've got a lot of history and a lot of things you can kind of reach back for to decide, you know, how they would behave. That's great. So does it use a card mechanic, or is it a D20 system?
Again, just like Malifaux, it uses a card mechanic. You have one fate deck for the whole party that they draw from. And then they have their own special cheat deck as well. Now, the cheat deck is basically a reduced deck where you've prioritized certain suits in your deck to basically reflect your character. But everyone draws from the same fate deck. And the fate master doesn't draw any cards in this game. So everything comes from the players drawing the cards. It just keeps, you know, when those moments you're playing a role-playing game, the DM's behind the screen rolling the dice going, yes. Okay, I'm just working out the results of what's happening. It removes that from the game completely and allows you just to play the game as it is and the Fate Master to just deal with everything as it comes and to decide everything as he is the Fate Master.
Right.
He's not leaving anything up to chance.
Nick, thanks for joining me today, and I hope this has inspired some people to take a look at Malifaux and its various settings. And if you're really interested in the lore as well, there's a podcast called Breachside Broadcast.
That's right, yes.
They do dramatic readings of the lore and kind of short stories from Malifaux.
So that's our overview of Malifaux. Thanks for joining us. I hope this gives you a little taste of the setting and gets you interested in the games. Thank you to Nick for being on the podcast. If there are any topics you would like us to cover in the future, please let us know in the comments. To support the podcast, please consider giving us a 5-star review on either iTunes or Stitcher. It would be greatly appreciated and will help us grow the podcast.
Bye.
Bye.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Oh,
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.